Hey, welcome to Define the Fight. We talk about a variety of different things, whether we're looking at creating a healthy lifestyle, overcoming adversity, or literally just tapping into that warrior mindset. That's what we're all about. And today, joining me is an amazing individual who has faced a lot of different challenges within his life, but chose to overcome. And when it comes to different things that happen to us in life, there's the controllables and then there's the non-controllables, but you still have the opportunity to, how do I want to move forward in life? And joining me today is Ryan Strube. He was an individual, young man at the point where he clearly was facing a lot of different adversity in life back in 2004 in Glendon, when his father made a choice to take the life of his mother and then to turn the gun on himself. But for him to be in the house as well as his sister, I can only imagine what is going through the mind, not only during that time frame, but days, months, and years to follow. So Ryan, thank you for joining me on the show today and then being willing to share your story.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything I can do to try to help somebody work through their own situation, so...
Well, I think a lot of people right now are facing different levels of challenges. A lot of, with what's going on in the world right now, people are losing hope. And when we start looking at other people's stories, we recognize, okay, hold on, I can take a deep breath. I can move through this. You know, Ryan overcame this, and I'm not even remotely close to facing what he did. So, I want to talk a little bit about your upbringing, Ryan, and kind of lead into the event.
Yeah, absolutely. So growing up, it was my dad, my mom, and my sister, all of us. We were in the same house. As we grew older, things continued to get worse. Both my parents were, alcoholics to start with. And then as time grew on and their problems grew, they self-medicated. We had multiple different instances where we tried to get my dad help. He chose not to get help, so... That was frustrating in itself, kind of showed you a little bit that, maybe the system's a little flawed in that way that, you can't force anybody to get help. They have to want to get help themselves. And then as we grew older, again, like I said, things continued to get worse up until that day. Remember it like it was yesterday, obviously, March 26, 2004, early in the morning, they came home from, a night of drinking and fighting. And like I told you before the show, I used to pray that, the fighting would end. And then all of a sudden it did end. And not really the way, you would hope, a prayer would be answered. But that day the fighting ended.
Prior to the event, what were some of the different things that you and your sister had to face? Because people don't understand what's going on behind closed doors. And I know you had mentioned prior to about, feeling embarrassed, not wanting people to understand what you were facing. A, what was it like for you and your sister? But then what were some of the different strategies that you utilized to keep your head afloat, right? The coping strategies.
Yeah, absolutely. So me and my sister, as we've grown and become closer over the years, we realized that we both had two different stories. I was done with the fighting. I was done with my parents. I isolated. I stayed busy, sports, school, work. And I would just go to my room, do my stuff, and just ignore everything. Just make sure that my big thing was I always tried to make sure that everybody was safe. Nothing happened in that regard, so I was much more of an interventionist, just trying to intervene, keep the peace kind of thing, and trying to keep it, like you said, behind closed doors. I didn't want any of my classmates to know what was going on at home. Nobody knew how bad it was until that day. And with my sister, a little bit younger, a little more, I don't want to speak for her, but maybe a little more naive, a little more interested, a little more hopeful, maybe.
Empathetic.
Yeah, a little more hopeful that, maybe if she was involved, something would, give them a reason to grow and change. So,
And I can only imagine the challenge of feeling probably more comfort when you're at school, being gone versus coming home. Like you said, you go right to your room, you isolate, disengage. It's like if I don't see the problem, the problem's not there. I just need to keep moving forward. For you, though, what was it like? Were you able to shut off the noise from home when you were at school?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was much happier at school, much happier at work, you know, practices, that sort of stuff. Definitely, I'm a big believer in idle hands are the devil's playground. So I always tried to stay busy, tried to keep my mind off of what was going on at home in hopes that, you know, that it would just go away maybe.
Do you still think the same way when it comes to a busy mind or staying busy? You look at avoidance, and it's very, we don't want to feel. Let's be honest. When it's something that is painful, we want to shift it. Or, you know, hey, if I keep myself busy, the noise or the darkness doesn't start trickling into where there is potentially light. Do you still have those same patterns that kind of come into play, or do you notice them more?
I would say I notice them more. I've definitely grown over the years of counseling and all of that, but I'm still definitely much a stuffer. Let's just stuff it and hope that it moves on. But eventually that box overfills and explodes on, you know, the people that do care about you.
100%. A hurt person hurts people, right, is really what it comes down to, because it's hard to open up Pandora's box and to face those different things. Now,
well, you can't really just trickle a little bit out.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
So once the lid pops off, it explodes on everybody around you. So it's definitely, I've noticed that, yeah, trying to deal with it as it arises is definitely the best way to deal with it. But sometimes, you know, life still continues and you still have to just get things done. So.
Oh, 100%. Now, for the day of the event, what most people don't recognize is that you and your sister were in the home when that happened.
Yes.
I can't imagine what that would be like, knowing that something happened. Now, were you guys upstairs, downstairs? Kind of. Do you want to, you know,
yeah,
the scenario so that we have a better idea of what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we had a split level house, attached garage. Parents came in through the garage. They went upstairs, continued their fighting upstairs. My sister, I believe, was starting to get ready for school. I was just on the verge of waking up. Tried to calm them down, calm down the fight. The calming down the fight is still probably one of my biggest regrets in what I said to them in that moment. Just be mindful of what might be the last thing you say to somebody. But they go upstairs. I'm laying in my bed, scrolling, I guess no scrolling back then, but watching SportsCenter, getting ready, mind ready for the day because school still happens, you know. Hear a little pop, few seconds later, seems like an eternity, didn't really know what it was, just a little pop. Few seconds later, my dad comes down, tells me what he did, then goes back upstairs, again, feels like an eternity, hear another little pop, and he falls to the floor. So then, after all of that, you know, the shock weighs in, go upstairs, check on them, they're both not responding. Let my sister know what happened, and then we went to call 911 from there.
I'm speechless right now.
Yeah, it's a little shocking. The one thing that always gets me is I don't understand why he came down and told me what he did.
And then went back upstairs.
Yeah. You know, I think, for myself, I believe he did that just so that we knew what happened, so there was no doubt of the order of operations.
Of when you come upstairs, yep. This is what you're going to see. So maybe it was the fact, if I want to mentally prepare you for what you're going to see prior to me now taking my life.
I don't know. That's given him a lot of credit, I think. Like, I think it was more so just, and it's just speculation.
Yeah,
I don't know.
100%.
We'll never know until we meet again, if we meet again.
Right.
And at that point, it probably won't matter. But right. I think it was just so that we know that so we didn't blame our mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
So maybe give him a little bit of decency that he did that so that we knew it wasn't her.
Well, Ryan, we're going to go into a quick break. But when we come back, I want to talk about the steps that were taken after, because I couldn't imagine knowing and then coming upstairs to, like, what happens next. So we'll be back here shortly on Define the Fight. Hey, welcome back to Define the Fight. We are here with Ryan Strube talking about different life events that we never really know what could happen in our life. But the key thing is understanding that we have different choices that we need to make moving forward. And Ryan, you clearly have done that within your life. I sit back and I wonder, what would I do in the situation that you and your sister had faced? And I honestly don't know. I know that I have a very strong mindset, but at the same point, until you physically see something with your parents in front of you, I couldn't imagine on how I would hold up, what, you know, what type of shock and level would come into play. Now, coming upstairs for you and knowing that what had happened, what all came into play, calling 911 and the steps that happened after?
Yeah, I mean, we came upstairs. Like, I can see, I still see it. It's burned into my brain, yeah. An image that'll never go away. Called 911, got, you know, local PD to finally come in. They were obviously skeptical doing their, doing their procedures, making sure the scene was clear. It was safe for them to come in, got them to come in. They, you know, did their thing. But all that was going through my mind was school's still going to happen. I still got to go to school. So asked one of the officers, you know, hey, can I shower, get ready for school? You know, all that stuff. Showered, got ready for school. They took me out to a squad car, went into Moorhead for questioning. Once questioning was over, life goes on, was back at school the same day there. So,
you know, shock shows up in different ways, shapes, or forms. And like you had said, that you were so used to the discomfort in the home that when that actually took place, it's like, okay, I need to keep my mind busy, what you had stated before. Now, at any point after the incident, did you have any fear of safety once your dad came down and spoke to you stating this is what happened upstairs? Because you hear a lot of different stories where, whether it's a male or a female, and then they take out the entire family.
Yeah, absolutely. I still wonder why he did that, but I believe it's so that we knew what happened that day, that we didn't put any blame on our mom, you know, that we knew it was him and that he just had a little bit of decency left in him, that he did tell us that. But over the years, you know, my sister and I have definitely wondered and, you know, just wondered why we survived, basically, you know. Yeah. But yeah, it was, you still kind of wonder that, why he did that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when it becomes like a love component where it's a male and a female, you never know the type of attachment, you know, the mindset of, well, if you're going to go, I'm going to go. Like, we're going together no matter what that looks like because I am so attached to you that no one else is going to have you.
Well, yeah, and that was definitely, I believe, was definitely the situation, that if my dad couldn't have my mom, then nobody was going to have her. And like you said, they were just going to go out together. And I guess looking at it, maybe me and my sister weren't part of his plan.
Right. No, I get that. Now, you ended up literally after seeing the worst case scenario at that point in your life to going to school. Did individuals at the school know what had happened when you came to school? What was that like?
At that point, I had thought nobody knew still. At that point, I didn't realize how big a deal it actually was for a small town, you know, to actually have some news, mm-hmm. you know, besides jaywalking or loitering or whatever. So at that point, when I went back to school, I had no idea that everybody knew, but you could just sense that something was off. And as I was sitting there in one of my classes, somebody brought in a get well card for my sister, and they didn't realize that I was in that class. So they escorted her out, but, you know, the trauma, shock, whatever I was in, thought it was funny. So I went and signed my own sister's get well card. But at that point, then I knew that everybody knew. And it was definitely an awkward last couple months for sure. Because we're all 18 or 17 or 18, high school, senior in high school, and they didn't know how to act. I didn't know how to act because I had been in that life for so long. That was my normal almost. Mm-hmm. So if I wasn't dealing with stuff, life was almost too easy.
Mm-hmm. You were waiting for the chaos to happen if it was standing still.
Yeah.
Fair?
Yeah, because, I mean, the last 3 months of high school were almost easy because I literally just was doing it myself. There was no chaos. There was no concern. There was, you know, I had to find a place to live, but, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah. What happened after clearly the smoke settled? where it's you and your sister. What type of support system or family dynamics, knowing that your father and your mother are now gone, what was that like for you and your sister?
Like immediate family, looking back, I mean, they were obviously in shock too. So again, I don't blame anybody for the way they responded. I mean, I don't know how I would respond. Mm-hmm. And I've gone through the situation. But looking back, they definitely dropped the ball. Our immediate family did. We both had family and friends that definitely helped out, gave us a place to crash, that sort of stuff. There was one teacher in particular that my math teacher offered me a place to stay, which looking back, that's just amazing, you know, mm-hmm. that he was willing to do that. My sister ended up going, she was picked up because she was a minor. So she went to a family friend. They adopted her. Then she had issues. So then she was given to my aunt. And then my aunt, all of a sudden I got a call from the lawyer and my aunt didn't want my sister anymore. So it was either I take her and adopt her or she went into the foster care. And I wasn't going to allow that to happen. So at 18, I adopted my sister as well. So
wow. That is a lot of weight for a young man to carry on his shoulders. So when you adopted your sister, what were your steps for providing?
Luckily, I had already had a pretty good job. So I already had a good job that I'd been working at for years. And the person that I worked for was basically a father figure in that regard. So he helped us out quite a bit, definitely helped, maintain the job, that sort of stuff, and helped us find, the things we needed along the way. So
from going from brother to guardian and
father,
father.
I mean, taught her how to drive, made sure she got to class, did all that stuff. But I mean, looking back, I'm definitely very grateful that I don't understand why the other families didn't want her. I mean, maybe she changed when she moved with me, but I didn't think it was that bad. She basically had her life and I had my life and we just lived together.
But you guys have commonality, right? So being brother and sister, but then also being at the scene together, you experienced something extremely traumatic in your life where you were able to understand and resonate and, have different levels of communication. I couldn't imagine being 15 or 18 at that point and then have your world flipped upside down where the foundation in what you knew was now all of a sudden gone. Not saying that it was a stable or a strong foundation from your parents' dynamics, but at the same point, you had a roof over your head,
yep.
Food on the table, and you didn't have to question those things. No. It was the other pieces of the puzzle. How did you put the pieces of the puzzle back together?
Like you said, we didn't have to worry about food, shelter, that sort of stuff. That's where my parents did do right. Putting the pieces back together, I don't think you ever really fully put the pieces back together. You put a piece or two at a time together, and you'd make do, and the puzzle's never really finished. So it's all about the choices you make, and sometimes you don't have a choice to make. It's either you either do it or you don't. You become a good statistic or a bad statistic. So, and I wasn't going to become a bad statistic, excuse me. So life had to go on.
Well, you become either the victim or the victor of your story. And, sometimes it's the point where you are just literally treading water and that's all you can do at that point in time. We're going to go into a quick break, Ryan, but when we come back, we're going to talk about different steps as you became older, along with your sister, on how you guys are currently doing right now and then how it has impacted your family as well. So we'll be back here shortly on Define the Fight. I'm a firm believer that life leads us where we're meant to go. Sometimes we just can't see where it's leading us until we get there, but the journey is never done until we take our last breath. Joining me today is Ryan Struby, and looking at the different things that you have overcome in your life yet continue to overcome, I believe we learned so many different lessons. I've spoken about in the past that without struggle, where is success? We need to have both. For you being at the age of 18 and adopting your sister, clearly there was different life paths that had shifted or had changed, because after high school, the normal pattern back then was like, okay, I'm going to go to college. That's the next phase. And then clearly. Were you planning on attending college? Was the job force what you were looking at? Talk me through what led you to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So definitely, you know, was in that mindset, everybody's going to college, so you better go, you know. Yeah. So I had plans, yeah, to go to college to become a cop. And, you know, plans changed. Definitely people in my life were very, you know, encouraging of that. But with everything going on, not really knowing what I wanted to do, I definitely just decided to stay in the workforce and start working. And now looking back, you know, everything that happens in your life leads to something. For some reason it happens. You don't know why. You may never know why, but had I not continued in the workforce, continued down the path that I was on, I would have gone to college, would have gone somewhere else. But being I stayed in the workforce, I was able to, you know, meet my wife, have my kids. So everything happens for a reason. You just might not know that reason in that moment. And to have faith that someday that reason might show up at your front doorstep.
Reminds me of Garth Brooks' Unanswered Prayers. Yep. And I think, too, our prayers, sometimes we lead without clarity on what that is. But no matter what, God always has a plan for us. And it may not feel, or clearly it can bring pain. It can bring suffering, but it also brings different ways for us to elevate. It leads towards our strength. It leads towards love and humanity and learning different things on how we can become a better person, but then also appreciate life and how short it actually is. And you had mentioned your wife and your kids. You know, how supportive have they been in your journey? Because the grieving never stops. We just learn how to cope with it.
Right. I mean, it does lessen, but I still remember that day like it was just yesterday, you know? So things, they lessen, but they don't go away entirely. So yeah, like you said, you do have to learn how to just kind of deal with it, coping mechanisms, that sort of thing. Definitely the Rosa, my wife, you know, forced me to finally get counseling. And looking back on it, that was kind of the thing that was a little shocking when looking back, going through it. You know, the headline of the news article was that the kids at school got counseling for what happened. I never got counseling until my wife forced me to. And very grateful, obviously, that she did force me to, you know, able to work through some things and better improve myself. My counselor always would say, are you surviving or are you thriving? Mm-hmm. You know, and there's definitely a phase in life where surviving is the only option you have, but you'd hope to get to that thriving point at some point.
Now, you talk about the kids being offered counseling. Did anybody approach you or your sister following the incident to say, hey, we're going to lead you to this? Like, you know, literally bringing counseling on your plate. Like, okay, we need to schedule an appointment for these two.
Not that I can recall for myself. My sister, I'm not really sure on her side because back then we weren't the closest, you know, we were siblings, but not as close as we are today. And we've, you know, definitely grown the relationship over the years, but I don't recall anything, you know, maybe somebody mentioned it and I just blew them off. But even then I'm 18, I'm still a kid, you know, technically I'm an adult, but I'm still a kid. I would think somebody should have forced me to do it back then.
Mm-hmm. When you'd think too, if they were offering and pushing counseling to kids in the school, that a school counselor would have reached out at that point. And I know, I get it, right? There's so many different things that are going on. And how do you approach somebody who has experienced one of the worst case scenarios that could possibly happen? But that's why it's imperative that you grab that child. Because even though you're 18, you're still a child. I mean, I'm still going to throw it out there, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I was very mature for my age, and that's why I was able to make it, I believe. But yeah, I'm still a child at heart. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, to say, hey, you know what, Ryan? This is going to be very important for, you know, moving through life one step at a time. And we want to be there with you because we couldn't imagine what you've experienced today. Now, with what you have experienced, how has that helped you with and your family too? Because now I know your daughter has also clearly experienced extreme trauma. How has counseling for you, you know, be able to connect with your daughter in all of those different scenarios as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm probably more famous for being Natalie's dad. than my own story, which is fine. It's not about my story. It's about hers and what, you know, we have all been able to accomplish through that and the positives that we have brought through that. But my counseling has definitely helped. I wish I would have done it sooner. You know, you always say that. And what could have been, what should have been, you know, could have been better father, could have been better husband, all of that, if I would have gotten it sooner. But allowing me to do it now, you know, I probably did it probably 4 or 5 years ago now, but it definitely allows me to be more responsive to when she is, you know, going through something now, or my son is going through something. I'm more able to digest the situation instead of just responding, because that's how I dealt with it in the past. You have a situation, you respond to it. You just do it.
Do you want to share briefly Natalie's story so people can have a better understanding of what we're talking about on her overcoming adversity?
Yeah, absolutely. So Natalie's story is traumatic in itself. I mean, we've all had traumatic stories. And that's one thing I've learned over the years, too, is that our story is the most traumatic story to us.
Yeah.
And everybody has their own story. So we got to be mindful of that. But Natalie's story, when she was a very young baby, was raped by a teenage boy, multiple times within a 5-hour window. While we were at a football game, his parents were with us. He was babysitting along with his other siblings. And she ended up disclosing to me, luckily, you know, at that time, she did feel comfortable enough to come to me. So then we, you know, sat down with her, went through all the steps with the counseling with her. And I mean, thank God she doesn't have hardly any residual issues going forward. So,
well, I think, too, when you look at what you have faced, you recognize where the gaps were and not wanting to have those gaps for your daughter. So between you and Rosa, making sure, hey, we need to make sure that we are supporting our daughter 100% and as in-depth as we possibly can, because PTSD is real, trauma is real. And at such a young age, how can we build that strength, but then also help the healing process sooner versus later?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that definitely going through my situation, I definitely wanted to make sure that she got the counseling she needed, because I didn't, and what could have been had I gotten it sooner, you know. So I definitely, Rose and I definitely wanted to make sure she got what she needed right away and didn't wait. And
from a parent perspective, now I've got two boys, and that is one of my biggest fears, is if something were to ever happen to my child. When you look at, and I know the scenarios are completely different, Ryan, and I think it's easier for us to say, hey, I'd rather have something happen to me versus happening to my child.
100%.
What was that? Well, what was that like for you? I mean, I'm sure like the brain zoo was going like there's no tomorrow, and it's almost like, okay, restrain me right now, because I know as a parent, I would have a hard time holding myself back.
Yeah, I definitely struggled with that, because we did the motorcycle rallies, and I talked to a lot of the dads and the guys that were doing that. And they'd always give me the, you know, I can't believe you didn't do, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever. And I'm like, I can't. I have to be there for her.
Yeah.
Me sitting behind bars doesn't do any good. Did I make a mistake potentially in trying to let the justice system handle it? Yeah, they dropped the ball, but you know, with Rosa's strength, we were able to, you know, change the law. So hopefully it's a little better for the next kid.
And the law is Natalie's law. And what were the gaps or the holes in the law that you guys ended up pushing forward through to make sure that it was passed?
Yeah. That one there, I was definitely on more on the background support sort of stuff backing up Rosa on that, but she would know more than that. But I believe mostly it was able to, just making it more fair for both sides of the family. They were given things that we weren't given. There was no sort of detainment. The gentleman, the kid, was never even put in handcuffs, was never actually even arrested. There was just so much lacking in that sort of stuff. So we just tried to level the playing field a little bit.
Oh, 100%. Well, and I'm grateful for the fact that you and Rosa push through so that another family that may experience the same thing has a law in place so that, you know, there's justice. There really is. We're going to go into a quick break, Ryan, but when we come back, I want to talk about how important your faith is for you and for your family. So we'll be back here shortly on Define the Fight. Hey, welcome back to Define the Fight. looking at all of the different things that individuals can face, Ryan, clearly you have faced a significant amount, more than in a lifetime that people might face in multiple lifetimes. I'm a firm believer that God does his best work on broken. But I tell you what, sometimes you're like, God, I've been there, I've experienced, and I don't want to feel anything else right now. What has God done for you in those hard times, or was it your faith that you leaned to in those troubling times?
Yeah, it definitely was my faith, for sure. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, I'd pray for the fighting to end, and I would pray that, you know, nobody in my public life would know how bad it was behind closed doors. And that prayer was answered, not the way that I would have hoped, but that prayer was answered in a way that led me to where I am today, with the family, the job, the things that we've done with Natalie's Law, all of that stuff, you know, leads towards something. So definitely, you know, lean into your faith, find your faith, lean into that, have some understanding that, yeah, I mean, we're talking during break that I could write down a whole list of the crap that I've gone through. And it's like, God, when is enough enough? But you have to, I have to remind myself, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but I have to remind myself that this is a test. This life we're in is a test for our future in heaven. And I'm not perfect. I'm going to fail a few tests, but you just have to remind, I have to remind myself that that's what this is. It's a test. And tests aren't always fun. Sometimes they are, you know, sometimes they're simple little tests. Sometimes they're bigger tests, but you have to just get through it with your faith, that knowing that he won't give you more than you can't handle.
Even though we question that when we're in the midst of, okay, he won't, you know, give you more than what you can handle, even when it feels like your shoulders are so heavy that they're literally sitting on the floor. I want to share a little tidbit to you. I was at a conference, and the point that he had made, it was John Maxwell. He had made a state that in life, we're so focused on personal comebacks. I can do this. I can do this. This is what I need to do. Instead of turning it to divine comebacks. That really, really hit home. We tend to sit in the driver's seat, put the foot on the accelerator, and it's like, let's go. Like, I've got this. I just need to do this. And then this is my next step. Instead of taking a step back. And recognizing that sometimes that step back is a step up, because now you're leaning in to your faith, you're leaning into your prayer, and you're saying, okay, God, this is where I'm at. I really need your help. Please guide me. Utilize me as a vessel, instead of us thinking that we are the superior. And we get caught in ego. We get trapped very, very easily. But diving into that divine comeback on, I need your help. We aren't meant to move through this life alone. We're meant to hold the hand of the one from above, and also the individuals that he's provided within our life, on how can we link arms? How can I be there for you? But also, can you be there for me when I need it? And clearly there's been people in your life that have been there for you, maybe not as many in the beginning, but look at who he provided into your life currently, where you're at in your life.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's definitely some people that even in the very beginning that were there. I remember, you know, the day after, and we just, you know, got back into the house, were able to clean things up. And I remember standing on the front porch with a handful of those people and being like, this is awful, but God was here. I'm still here. My sister's still here, because I believe that day that God protected us from, you know, finding the same fate that my parents did. And I, yeah, remember standing there the following day being like, yep, Jesus was here. I mean, as awful as it sounds, but God allows awful things to happen to allow us to make the free will choice of how we're going to, you know, answer that question. Because, I mean, yeah, I could have been a bad statistic. I mean, I've never smoked, never drank, no drugs, no crime issues, no nothing. But that's all because I chose to stay with Jesus and follow that path. I mean, again, I'm not perfect. Haven't always been what I would call an acting Christian, you know, always was a believer, but just not acting it out like you should.
You had mentioned a certain image or a situation where Jesus is protecting the doorway. Share that with me.
Yeah, I mentioned that to you in a break, and that's kind of a meme I saw it scrolling through, doom scrolling somewhere.
Doom scrolling. You know,
and it's the parents are fighting on the outside of the door, and Jesus is blocking the door while the kids are curled up in the bed being protected by Jesus blocking the door. And that's always the image that comes to my mind when my dad came down and told me what he did. And it's like, and you can kind of feel it. I kind of get the goose tinglies just thinking about it, you know? And it's like, I believe that's what happened that day.
You know, but look at how God works through you, Ryan. You may not see that or feel that, but this is from an outsider speaking to you right now. This is the first time I've ever met you. But how you speak and the way that you look at different things and what you have done for others and continue to do, I'm a firm believer that God works through us. And through what you have faced in your life, He is leaving such a strong impact on your heart that you are turning on the lights of others and whom you meet.
Well, I hope so. That's definitely the point. That I've had moments where I've been laying in bed thinking about doing, you know, stuff like this, giving my testimony, because, you know, we overcome the evil one by the words of our testimony. So he's losing right now because I'm sharing my story. I'm nervous. I'm all of the things, but I can't lose.
No, because he's always with you. You know, I want to thank you because I know it's not easy reliving or having the different flashbacks and the things that you've experienced in your own life, but then also too in your families and your daughters. And sometimes it's challenging, right? Because we know, okay, what's next, right? The wondering of, okay, is this going to be pulled from out underneath from my feet, or what is next? And if we get trapped in that mindset of what is next, then we're not really living in what is the present.
Right.
And then that's what we need to do.
Then you're surviving, yep, and not thriving.
100%.
You're waiting for the next shoe to drop, you know, the next bad thing. And maybe it will be a bad thing, but it's just another opportunity.
100%. We just have to be prepared for the good opportunities instead of always looking for the bad.
Right.
I want to thank you so much, Ryan, for joining me today. I wish you and your family nothing but positive light and energy in all that you do.
Well, I appreciate that.
You know what, you guys, if you are currently struggling with a challenge within your life, recognize that you're not alone. If it feels like it's really dark and if it's really heavy, seek support. That is what it is there for. If you need somebody to reach out with, like, I'm alone, don't be afraid to reach out on my Facebook page. I will follow up with you. But until then, until you define the fight, how do you expect to win the fight? And it is your fight to win. Have a great week.